Okay, we're going to open committee.
Okay, yeah, so let's Angela explain that.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Human Services. Today is April 12th, and we will begin our discussion by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1058. Matt, if you will, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1058 expands the scope of DHS investigations of abuse of certain adults with developmental disabilities, mental illnesses, or substance abuse disorders.
Thank you very much. And we have two people signed up to testify, Justin Hopkins and Elise. Brown? Oh, I knew.
She's leaning down.
Oh. Oh, there she is. I said Elise, and then where is she? She's gone. There she is. Thank you very much.
Go ahead. Good afternoon, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Justin Hopkins. I'm the director of the Office of Adult Abuse Prevention and Investigations, shared service with the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority. Purpose for my testimony today is to provide information on Senate Bill 1058. I've provided written testimony as well that goes into more details, and I know you have a lot of items on your agenda today, so I'm going to keep this brief. Really, this bill aims to address three gaps in the existing statute that addresses abuse protections for the behavioral health population. The first thing that it aims to do is to expand the definition of abuse for people with mental illness. Currently, there are certain types of abuse in the statute that do not apply to an individual who has a mental illness, but they do apply to somebody who has a developmental disability. So, for example, financial exploitation, financial abuse, certain types of neglect, and verbal abuse are not things that apply to the mental health population in the existing statute. This bill would address that. It would make the definitions of abuse consistent for a person with a mental illness and a person with a developmental disability. So it does not look to change any definitions for individuals with developmental disabilities. The second thing that it aims to do is to expand the population that's covered under the abuse statute to include individuals who are receiving services from the Oregon State Hospital. Currently in the statute, the language applies to somebody who's receiving services from a residential treatment facility out in the community or just from a community mental health program. The Oregon State Hospital patients are not contemplated in the existing statute, so this would expand the protections for them as well. And the third thing that it aims to accomplish is to expand the population covered under the abuse statute to include individuals receiving substance use disorder treatment services in residential facilities. This is a highly vulnerable population, and currently there are no protections from abuse for this population. These programs are regulated by the Oregon Health Authority, but individual allegations of abuse by staff are not subject to investigation. We've had recent and ongoing examples of verbal and physical abuse against individuals receiving services in these settings that OWAPI has not been able to investigate because we don't have that authority. And lastly, just given the timing here, wanted to let you know that we're working with a broad stakeholder group to fine-tune some of this language to make sure that we get it just right. We've had one work group meeting so far. We've got a couple more on the books, and we're asking the committee for consideration to send it on to the next chamber where we would work on amendments there. And with that, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any questions the committee has.
Okay, Elise, would you like to go first, please?
Sure. Vice Chair Olson and members of the committee, Elise Brown, here for LifeWorks Northwest Mental Health and Addiction. LifeWorks Northwest is a community mental health addictions and prevention agency, and it's dedicated to serving the most vulnerable persons in our community. I should know because my sister is one of those consumers and is severely mentally disabled. We are here to share some objections to Senate Bill 1058. We appreciate the intent of this legislation, but we do have some strong opposition, and I just wanted to share those briefly. We object to the bill, which sets out to expand the definition to include those adults beyond severely disabled adults. LifeWorks Mental Health and Addiction does a lot of outpatient treatment in mental health and addiction. And we believe that expanding the application of this abuse law to include all adults seeking mental health and community substance abuse treatment is misguided. It removes the protection of confidentiality. It undermines the personal autonomy we're trying to attempt to enhance our clients, and it jeopardizes the trust necessary for treatment to be successful. With the exception of severely mentally ill adults like my sister, for whom the original law was developed, most adults who seek mental health treatment or substance abuse treatment do not constitute a vulnerable population. They're not severely mentally ill. They're your neighbors, your family members, your friends. In order to feel comfortable seeking treatment, they need the guarantee of confidentiality and privacy, for which both state and federal law afford them. They're able to advocate for themselves, unlike children, elderly, and developmentally disabled, and those with severe mental illness. They do not need or desire to have the protection provided by this law, which would mandate us as providers to breach their confidentiality to report these actions listed as abuse. So it's for those reasons, Chair Gelser and Vice Chair Olson, that we're here to oppose the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Committee members, any questions? Senator Morris Anderson? I have one. Justin, you talked about the fact that you'd like to, you're working on amendments and you'd like to get it to the other side to keep it going. Are you willing to work with Ms. Brown to figure these out, or is there reconciliation?
So, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, absolutely. We've got a stakeholder group that's already working on some of the issues that you raised during your testimony, and we'd absolutely love to include you in those work groups.
Perfect. Disclosure, I did not know of this work group discussion going on. My client alerted me. LifeWorks is hopefully at that table or through the association, so appreciate the opportunity to further our concerns in the confines of that work group discussion. So thank you.
Justin, do you know approximately when you'll come to some reconciliation or when there'll be amendments available? Because it's a long leap of faith to ask us to move this bill to the other side so you can fix it.
Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, we have a couple of work group meetings scheduled for later in April. Based on the first work group meeting we had, we have some ideas for amendments that we could introduce. Just given the timing, there was not an opportunity to come back together, land on that before this hearing today.
So I am a little bit confused because when the health authority came to me and asked for the bill, it sounded like it was ready to go because this was just within the last 2 weeks. And I indicated that it was late, but my understanding was it was ready to go. What changed since that time?
Chair Gelser, I think the outstanding questions or concerns out there are really who should the bill apply to? What's that intended population? Just talking about a person with a mental illness who may be receiving services that are publicly funded or publicly regulated casts a very broad net. And conversations with our stakeholders and similar to what we heard here, I think we need to find a way to narrow that to make sure that the limited resources that we have are used most effectively to investigate allegations of a truly vulnerable population, and also to recognize the independence and autonomy that folks have while living in the community. And we have some ideas around that.
And follow up?
Sure, certainly.
What is the consequence of waiting on this until 2018? I mean, the autonomy of individuals, how overburdened OWAPI is in completing investigations are both very consequential issues. So I certainly have discomfort with the idea of moving something forward with significant unanswered questions on both of those fronts. What's the flip side?
Sure. Chair Gelser, I think the flip side is right now we don't have any kind of statutory protection for individuals at the Oregon State Hospital. So I think if we're looking at these three issues that are trying to be addressed through this legislation, that would be first and foremost. We want to make sure that folks at the Oregon State Hospital are included in the protections that are available to people in the community and residential treatment facilities. Those protections do not extend as far as verbal abuse, financial exploitation, certain types of neglect. So this was also an attempt to make sure that those things could apply to those more vulnerable populations. What we need to do is figure out how to limit it to people who might have mild depression or coming in to be seen once every 3 to 6 months, something like that.
Yeah, my question was actually kind of related to that. You know, the bill is focusing on people with a mental illness, person with a mental illness who's receiving services from a state hospital, a community program or facility, or a substance abuse disorder receiving services from a facility. So that's really the population you're talking about. You're not talking about the person who's coming in every few months or whatever. I mean, it's someone who's residential. Is that correct?
Chair Gelser and Senator Dembro, I think given the movement in Oregon away from facility-based care for adult behavioral health services and recognizing that there's a tremendous effort going on right now to make sure that folks do have a key to their own home, I think that there are some of these protections that could and should apply to folks in the community.
Yeah, well, just to follow up, I would agree that that gets trickier then as to where you draw the lines. I mean, if this were just limited to the state hospital, you know, I think, for me it wouldn't be as big a problem if that's where the immediate need is.
Thank you.
Senator Morris Anderson.
I would be much more comfortable if we would take the time to work it in the interim rather than pushing something through without truly understanding all of the ramifications.
And may I follow?
Certainly.
Oh. Madam Chair, I just wanted to say, you know.
I'm the chair. I'm not a madam.
You're not a madam?
Yeah, no.
Sure. All right. Looking past you,
I know,
Madam
I
Chair.
You.
I just wanted to let you know that I'm not in the habit of voting bills across the floor that are not even close to being done. And so I would think that we would should look for a relating clause that might fit from maybe a bill coming over from the House or something of that nature, or working on in the interim. I mean, that's obviously urgent. I don't know if it qualifies as an emergency, but I don't feel comfortable sending a bill out that we don't even know what the language is going to be ultimately. So,
and if I may, and a follow-up on that, if you say there's no protection at the Oregon State Hospital, I find that remarkable statement in the fact that it is the Oregon State Hospital and we should be protecting every one of those patients at all times without, you know, regard or without law. So I wouldn't understand why the Oregon State Hospital wouldn't have rules in place for that protection. So, Senator Gelser, please.
And I would just agree with all of these things. I think it's probably better to pull it off the agenda and work forward. And I would just apologize to the committee members. It was my understanding that it was ready to go. I had not had any concerns about the bill brought to me before I walked in the room today from the health authority or from the stakeholders. So it's just a lot of information really fast, and we're unfortunately out of time. And the issues of autonomy and the workload of OWAPI are just too significant to take a gamble on, and I don't want to do that to the other chair, to send something that is really still just in the seed stages of thinking. It doesn't seem very well fleshed out at this point in time.
Yeah. Madam Chair, now I understand why you want me to open the committee and do this. We will close the public hearing. Does anybody else want to testify on this first? We will close.
Will you ask if the health authority wanted to say anything since it came from the health authority? Would
the health authority like to speak? They're leaving quickly. I see them.
Hey.
Go ahead, take it.
Chair Gilser, Vice Chair Olson, for the record, Justin Black from the Oregon Health Authority. It sounds like a good plan. We apologize for it not being fully baked before it got here, and we totally understand that.
Thank you for being kind and understanding.
Yes. Thank you.
And I'm really sorry. It's always sad at this time of session when.
No, and I think we understand.
Great. Anybody else on Senate Bill 1058? Seeing that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1058. We are not going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1058, and we are not going to carry that over. Some of the presenters on Senate Bill 944 are finishing up a presentation at NAMI, so we are going to do that very last in order to accommodate them.
Did you tell me it was number two? You did.
I did, yes. They're on the phone. Excellent. Thank you, Laura. We're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 944.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 944 requires the Department of Human Services to study the effectiveness of local community partnerships in mental health and addiction services to senior citizens and persons with disabilities and report to the Legislative Assembly by September 1st, 2018. It sunsets December 31st, 2018. There's a dash one amendment. It replaces the measure and it establishes the Youth Acute Behavioral Health Leadership Council in the Governor's Office. It requires the Council to develop a proposal for centralized coordination of the behavioral health services for certain children and adolescents. It requires the Council to report recommendations to the Legislative Assembly by October 1st, 2018, and sunsets the Council provisions on January 2nd, 2021. It also requires the Governor to appoint a behavioral health policy advisor to coordinate state behavioral health, to coordinate state behavioral health services. And it also directs OHA to contract with a nonprofit organization to establish a 24-hour call center related to the placement of children needing high acuity behavioral health services, and it declares emergency and is effective on passage. We do have a statement of no revenue impact from LRO, and we are still waiting on the fiscal from LFO.
Good. And we've got Sarah Lochner and Andrew Grover and Robin Henderson and Chris Beneff are on the phone. So let's start with Sarah and Andrew, please.
Okay. Chair Gilser, Vice Chair Olson. There's the phone. My name's Andrew Grover. I'm the Executive Director of Youth Villages in Oregon. We're a nonprofit organization serving high-needs youth and family across the state. This year, we'll serve roughly 1,000 young people and their families who are struggling to safely and successfully live in the community. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 944 with the dash one amendment, which is the result of a stakeholder-driven process. We had many voices at the table, and it's focused on addressing the needs of very complex, high-needs young people who are slipping between the cracks of Department of Human Services, Oregon Youth Authority, Oregon Health Authority, et cetera. Some of the voices at the table included Providence, NAMI, Albertina Kerr, Trillium, Unity, and a whole group of others who provided consultation and expertise. This bill does three important things. I'm going to talk about one of those three things before I turn it over to Robin Henderson and Chris Boneff, who are on the phone. The first of these is to establish a leadership council. I'm going to be very brief about this. This would be a multi-sector leadership council designed to support high-needs youth, again, who are slipping between the cracks of these agencies. This council would clearly define the population, fully explore options to better meet their needs. They would have the authority to consider alignment of funding streams and policies across the agencies, and ultimately ensure a sustainable and accountable system to support these young people. The Leadership Council would then bring their proposal to the 2019 legislature. There would be an interim report in 2018, a status update, that would create a single coordinated entity designed specifically to meet these kids' needs. It can build on things that are working in Oregon and things that are working in other states that they may review in the process. The Leadership Council concept has been called for by other entities. The Juvenile Justice Mental Health Task Force that was convened by Chief Justice Ballmer in 2015, I believe, was in keeping with this, and we've seen others who have sought a solution to this problem. This is our attempt to do something positive for these kids, and if we don't do anything, we can be sure nothing will change. So that's part one. I'm going to turn it over to Robin, who's going to talk about part two.
And Robin is on the phone. Are you okay to wait, Sarah? Thank you.
Hang on just a second. We needed to restart it.
Robin, are you on the phone?
He's patching it through. Oh,
sure.
We accidentally lost the call.
Robin, are you on the phone?
Yes, we are.
Fantastic. You are up. It is your turn. Welcome. And will you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Chair Gelser. My name is Robin Henderson. I am a licensed psychologist, and I'm the chief executive of Behavioral Health for Providence. I'm here to talk with you today about Senate Bill 944, and I know that my colleague Andrew Grover spoke with you before about some aspects of the bill. I'm specifically going to focus on the area of funding a 24/7 dedicated phone line, crisis line, basically, for high acuity services for children and adolescents, providers and advocates. It started really for us as a group of advocates about 7-8 months ago when we were beginning to realize at the start of summer that some of us had very full beds with waiting rooms filled with patients wanting to get in, and some people didn't have patients at all. And we realized that we had a misalignment in how we were distributing kids throughout the system, because that should never really, really happen. We all know that in the summertime, some of our census fluctuates a lot, but even during the regular times of the year, there are times that we just don't know, and we don't call each other and say, hey, could we maybe, I know this sounds a little bit odd, but swap a higher acuity kid for a lower acuity kid, or maybe I can put a boy in this bed, but I only have a bed for a girl, and how could we all work together? And we started to think about how we could perhaps collaborate, and we tried a morning phone call. So all of the different intake providers would get together once a day and talk about how they could work. But we found that it's really a 24-hour-a-day problem when you're calling from the hospital in Seaside and you don't know who to call. And when you're calling from someplace out in Central Oregon and you realize that you've got to call all 7 agencies that do acute or subacute care and get on all of those wait lists. I know that when you start to add up those wait lists, it can often look like there are more kids waiting for beds than there really are, because the reality is that same child may be on 7 different wait lists, because that's the only hope that a facility and a family has. So what we'd like to propose is air traffic control for the child and adolescent provider system. We've worked very closely with our partners and come to an agreement that we think setting up a 24/7 crisis line dedicated at this time really to the provider community to be able to call and work around to see where we can get the right person into the right bed closest to the place where we can serve their families, and really begin to provide data about what types of kids are seeking beds so that we can begin to create and maintain a system for statewide capacity monitoring. We believe the time is really ripe now that we're all willing to do this and participate together, and really would like to have that neutral agency that becomes basically air traffic control for kids. This is an opportunity for a cooperative agreement, but we do need a little fiscal help from the legislature, and that's what we're asking for from you today. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them, but I also would like to give some time to my colleague, Chris Bonoff. We just came from the NAMI luncheon, where we're hoping to raise a lot of money to keep their good work going as well.
Thank you so much, Robin. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. My name is Chris Bonoff. I represent the Oregon State Chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Health Illness, and I'm here to talk specifically about Section 2 of Senate Bill 944 in reference to a behavioral health policy advisor. Quickly to note, this would be a position within the governor's office at an executive level. The more immediate task associated with this legislation would be to staff the Leadership Council. But I want to talk a little bit bigger about why we think this position is not only needed, but a huge benefit. you know, we have a lot of agencies and a lot of entities doing a lot of activities and managing a lot of systems, and they often don't know what the other system is doing. They're often working on parallel efforts rather than combining efforts for a common purpose. They're often even working at cross purposes without even knowing they're doing so. You know, to date, we've relied on all these agencies and these entities to cooperate proactively in some circumstances. In other circumstances, they may stumble across each other and cooperate in that way. And we hold these work groups where one agency is trying to redesign something, and the way they engage other agencies is invite their representatives on that work group, and that just seems to perpetuate, for lack of a better term, some chaos. From a NAMI's perspective, this position that the governor's office gives us a set of eyes that's really responsible for monitoring and coordinating all these various silos and agencies and efforts. It gives a point of collaboration, and when appropriate, really a point to force accountability, to force systems to work together, to cooperate, to not recreate wheels constantly. What we like about this is, you know, we've often thought of some grand gesture legislatively, creating some new agency, restructuring things. This is something very simple. We don't need new infrastructure. We just need this issue elevated essentially to a cabinet-level position, which is what we just did on the federal level. All of us as advocacy organizations, the provider organizations, there was recent legislation that elevated a position to assistant secretary level that essentially serves that role. Requires and gives us the attention of in our behavioral health system that it's due, so that we can begin more effectively collaborating and be more efficient in our these parallel efforts. And I thank you for the time, and I urge your support for Senate Bill 944.
Thank you so much, and Ms. Lochner.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Lochner with the Oregon Health Authority. I do want to just say that the agency is neutral on Senate Bill 944, but we are generally supportive of the Dash 1. We absolutely share the common goal of helping children and their families. We see the need for better communication and a more streamlined process for helping kids access the services that they need. I do want to put on the record, however, that OHA would like a seat on the Leadership Council as the agency responsible for the regulation and oversight of the public dollars that that fund this system. We have valuable expertise to help inform this group. We also think that this body should focus on the whole kid system, not just those requiring acute care beds. And that is all. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Any questions for anybody on the panel?
Yes.
Senator Montes Anderson.
So my question is, because it's going to be in the governor's office, couldn't this come out of the governor's budget rather than general fund? Because I think you mentioned you would need general fund money. And so I don't know if we have a fiscal or at all on this yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Senator Montes Anderson, I appreciate the question. I'm not sure I'm prepared to make a comment on how that position is funded. We're taking from a policy position. We feel like that role is important to getting this kind of work better integrated across the agencies. So in terms of how it gets funded, I can't answer that.
Well, I'm just looking outside the box, Madam Chair. Yeah.
Yeah, follow up, please.
Just that there have been so many requests for funding in this session. It's unbelievable when we're in a budget crisis. And if we can go outside of the box and try to look for funding elsewhere, and who knows what priorities the governor would put with the budget that she has to work with. So that's why I'm throwing that out.
Thank you. Any other? Senator Olson.
When I look at the situation and look at what happens to these children, to me this is a valuable investment that we have to put into these kids. They have to be able to have the opportunity to get someplace and be taken care of rather than shuffled off into hotels and motels, etc. So thank you. Just want to put that on the record.
Thank you, Senator. Any further questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you to those on the phone. Next up, we have Paul Cosgrove. And is there anyone else who is not signed up that would like to say something about this bill. And you get the last word, Mr. Cosgrove.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And due to the time, I will try to be brief. Paul Cosgrove, representing Legacy Health. And I would just like to point to you a letter in OLAS from Dr. Chris Ferentinos, who's Legacy's Vice President for Unity Center for Behavioral Health, in support of Senate Bill 944 and the Dash 1 amendments. As you know, Unity is a cooperative arrangement between Legacy Health, OHSU, Adventist, and Kaiser, recently opened in Northeast Portland. It plus our Randall's Children's Hospital is obviously an entry place for many of the kids that we're talking about here today, and we believe that this is a very positive step forward. So thank you. Hope you can support Senate Bill 944 with a dash one. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Cosgrove? Seeing none. And last chance, anybody else? All right. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 944. We do not have the paperwork on Senate Bill 944, so we are going to hold over Senate Bill 944 to Monday.
Okay.
Just one more time. We're holding over Senate Bill 944 to Monday. And we'll go and we're going to work the work sessions from the top to the bottom. So first we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 263, and I would invite Bob Jundiff and Morgan Allen, please. We can have them. Okay. We can have them do it. Thank you. And this is, you'll remember this bill from earlier in the session. This was the shortened school days, kids that were not in school all day. We can't move the bill today because unless the fiscal statement magically comes through before we get to the end of the list. But I wanted to put on the record many thanks to Hannah Lai, who after we got to a point yesterday had an amendment to us within 90 minutes. And Hannah, if she is listening, should be sainted and cloned. So I wondered if the two of you would be willing to explain the compromise and where we're at.
You good?
Thank you, Senator Gelzer, members of the committee. My name is Bob Jundiff from Disability Rights Oregon. First of all, I'd like to thank you and Morgan and his colleagues for working very carefully with us to try to come up with some workable solutions to see that children who have been excluded from school either because of medical or behavioral problems can receive the education that they need in order to proceed in life. And what we've done is that we have come up with some basic guidelines, some broad guidelines having to do with how the process should work when it's necessary for a child to be excluded from school for some period of time to make sure that that child gets the full attention of their IEP team, their individual education plan team, and that the parent has a full opportunity to participate in that plan and the creation of that plan, and that the parent is aware that the parent can bring new information to that team at any time, can raise concerns about how the process is going, and make sure that they have a full opportunity to appeal to a higher level should there be an inadequate service provided. These are, in our estimation, rules that are required under the federal IDEA law, the special education law, that we have we have some problems in Oregon in terms of following that law. This the bill will provide a more direct structure and direction to make sure that it's clear what's expected of school districts in these situations.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Morgan Allen on behalf of COSA, and I would echo Bob's sentiments. Thank you.
And since we're not the education committee, could you say what COSA is?
Oh, excuse me. Morgan Allen with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators.
Thank you.
It's been a busy week working on lots of amendments, and glad that I think we've reached a reasonable compromise on this bill that will improve outcomes for students. And just to briefly reiterate what Bob said, I think what the bill really does from our perspective is it clarifies the current IEP process and puts some more clarity in statute about
having parents meaningfully participate in those discussions and ensuring that all of the continuums of placements are at least discussed at the meeting, which I know there's some concern that doesn't always happen. And then I think more importantly, the new piece in the bill is requiring school districts to provide some regular notification to families of their rights under the IEP process and their ability to request a relook at what the IEP team has decided. And then it requires districts to do that on a regular basis, which I believe right now is probably something around a yearly requirement, and we'll do it a few times a year to remind them of the responsibility of the district to communicate with them and go from there.
And I just wanted to thank both of you and all the people that you represent. I know that both sides have given up a lot to get to this spot, so it's always really great to see groups come together and find a path forward. Are there any questions for this panel? All right, we will move the bill. We're going to carry this over to Monday, unless the fiscal statement gets here before we get through the long list, which it's a long list, so, you know, who knows?
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. So with that, again, carrying over Senate Bill 263, closing the work session on Senate Bill 263, opening up a work session on Senate Bill 819. And this one is the cert bill that we talked about earlier. We held this over from Monday. The dash one amendment removes the requirement that public members or legislators or judges be included in the cert team. That leaves it to the discretion of the director. If the director determines that it would be on this particular cert, it would be a good idea to have legislators, or it would be a good idea to have a judge, or it would be a good idea to have a CASA or not. The reason in working with counsel that the language specifically references a judge and a legislator is that because of separation of powers, the director of the Department of Human Services could identify that he would like to have one of those kinds of people there, but he or she would not have the ability to appoint. So that appointing authority, if it's a judge or if it's a legislator, would have to be the presiding officer or the chief justice. And that's why those particular public members are called out. And then the dash one also incorporates the changes that DHS had asked for when we had the hearing, including some language around liability. There is a question that emerged from OTLA over the last day or so around whether that language is correct. I am worried about rushing the conversation on that detail. I've had a conversation with the chair on the other side and with DHS and the trial attorneys, and people were comfortable with moving forward and kind of having a relook at that on the other side. On the language around the liability and which pieces, how that language is around things that are admissible in court after one of these processes.
And there's no way we could get an amendment by Monday.
the concern about getting the amendment by Monday is so we did request an amendment initially, and then because it is an issue that really came up just a couple of hours before the hearing on Monday, because it touches a public record issue and it touches a liability issue, we could get it, but I would rather do it right than do it fast. And the parties were comfortable with doing that, and the chair on the other side was comfortable with looking at that if we're putting that piece on the record. I'm happy if the committee prefers to wait until Monday. I just am nervous about rushing the conversation, and not to malign attorneys, but it is a conversation with a lot of attorneys, and sometimes attorneys having a conversation really quickly doesn't really work.
Again, I don't know how we can compare this with the other bill that we decided to work on the interim. I just don't know how what a big issue this is. I mean, public records is a big issue to work on.
And I think the difference is it's an itty bitty piece of the larger piece of the bill. This is a detail of it. The rest of the bill is very, very fully baked. It's just a question of the way that the words the words come together. And we're very close to an agreement, but I just am nervous about rushing it, which I think is different from the other bill where it's unclear what the area of the bill would be, who would be covered.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You confused me. You said you're nervous about rushing it?
I'm nervous about, so we can...
Rushing the amendment.
Having the attorneys talk to each other to figure out which order the words go in. I would rather they had more than the weekend to figure that out. The rest of the bill is fine. It's this little piece that is in the amendment. We've talked with the... I've had lengthy discussions with the department, with the trial attorneys, and with Representative Kenny Geyer, who's the chair on the other side, with an agreement from all of the parties to complete that piece of the conversation on the other side when there's a little bit more time.
Senator Morris Anderson, are you comfortable with it?
I have gotten in trouble before when I have sent bills out of the Senate to be fixed on the House side, so that's why I just have a little caution here.
So if it would be helpful, I could get Arthur and Stacy and Chair Kenny Geyer here before the end of the hearing, if that would be a helpful thing. Because I've got the same thing. I called Representative Kenny Geyer to say, hey, I don't want to send you something that's not done that you have to do more work on if you're not comfortable doing that. And she indicated her complete comfort with doing that, as well as the parties that are engaged in the conversation.
And the bill can't go out without this particular section?
So we could send the bill unamended and amend it on the other side, but all of you had concerns about the legislators being, all of the bigger fixes and the corrections that DHS asked for are in there. I would be much more comfortable with this bill on the floor with all of those other fixes, noting that, you know, we've got a niggly thing in this one part of the bill rather than sending the whole thing without.
No, I was just thinking, Madam Chair, of having the amendment with all of your fixes, all of the fixes, and just removing that liability piece and let that, you know, I'd be comfortable with letting the House deal with that
and just
piece.
Add the liability piece back in.
I know
in
it means another amendment, but I know we could get that by Monday. It's, you know.
So
I know. I just hate to send things out.
So I, you know, as with a lot of things, when people are working in good faith and kind of have a bit of trust with each other, I think that the Dash 1 incorporates enough of the changes that it gives the department, if I speak wrong, give me another bad look and I'll call you up. That it provides the confidence to the department that we are not just going to ignore the concern. The OTLA was comfortable that if we put the concern on the record, even though it might confuse everybody, that would be enough reassurance that we were not going to ignore their concern and that they could have more than the weekend to get it right.
Could we call up the people, get that put on the record?
Mr. Ayers, would you come up? I don't think Mr. Towers is in the room, but okay. I can get him. I will get Mr. Towers. So let's hold this for a minute. Let's come back to it. I'm going to get Mr. Towers. I'm going to get Alyssa. I'm going to get Representative Kenny Geyer. Please hold. We'll open up the next thing. What's going to take a while? Okay, we're going to temporarily close Senate Bill 268. What's our bill number for the manufactured dwellings?
277.
Okay, Senate Bill 277. We're jumping ahead to fill time. We're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 277. And our folks that are coming forward with that compromise, I am not ignoring the hearing. I am texting Alyssa Kenny Geyer and Arthur Towers.
Would you like me to read the summary?
Would you? Well, it's changing, so let's let them explain that. This is, you all remember the hearing that we had on 277 and 801, right?
880.
I knew it was an 800 bill. And then everybody got together. We had quite the hearing that day. We heard about the swings, and we had the wonderful young woman that came and testified, and then everybody got together and, inspired by this young woman, have come forward with a solution.
Chair Kenny Geyer, John Van Landingham from Oregon Law Center.
Chair Gilster.
Excuse me.
What did I say?
Kenny Geyer.
Oh.
I'm texting her. So
clearly. I'm fuzzy-headed. So, Chair Gelser, members of the committee, John Van Lanningham, where do I work? Oregon Law Center. I do want to note that the 12-year-old girl who testified asked for a note from Chair Gelser to take to school to justify her absence from school. And the chair generously did that. The Manyard Housing Landlord-Tenant Coalition, which took a break last October, came together back together in February, met after the hearing on this bill on March 21. We reached a tentative agreement. I put that agreement in writing. We met again on April 4th. We unanimously agreed to that. And Legislative Council has put that into writing in the dash 3 that's before you. I'd be happy to go through the details of that if you wish.
I'd like it explained to me.
Okay. So if you were to look at the original bill, 277, it addresses an existing statute, 90.632, which allows a landlord to terminate a tenancy in a manufactured home park if the manufactured home, is in disrepair or deterioration. What the original bill did was to define what disrepair and deterioration mean using dictionary definitions. Previously, there was no definition. And so it's using words such as collapsing or failing staircase, broken, collapsing, creating a safety hazard. And it also says explicitly that aesthetic issues are not disrepair. So an aesthetic issue would be paint color. So the amendments make clear that peeling paint or paint that is so faded as to jeopardize the life of the siding, that is disrepair. But paint color by itself is not. There are other examples that I could go through that I put in my written testimony that's before you in OLIS. For example, installation of lattice or installation of in-window air conditioners that are correctly installed. That's a good example. So if the air conditioner is incorrectly installed and is dangerous of falling out and hitting somebody, that's disrepair. If it's correctly installed, that's not disrepair. That's an aesthetic issue. Aesthetic issues can be waived. That's the trick here. And that was the concern raised by the lobbyists for CalAM. Waiver means that if a landlord knows about a violation of the rules for at least 3 months and doesn't do anything about it, then the landlord can't terminate for that. So if the tenant painted the tenant's manufactured home polka dot, even though the rule said that paint has to be beige, and people do strange things, if the landlord accepted rent for 3 months or ignored that for 2 years, then that's waived. And the landlord can't terminate that tenancy because the paint color is wrong. So our main compromise that Mr. DiLorenzo actually suggested on March 21 was that we agree that there's a reset on aesthetic issues, even if waived, when a new tenant moves in. So, and that's not uncommon. We already do something like that with other kinds of disrepair where a landlord might say to the tenant, okay, this is disrepair, but I'm not going to make you deal with it now because I know that you're elderly and you don't have much money, and I'll make it done when you sell to a new tenant. And the new tenant, as long as we make sure that the new tenant knows about that responsibility before buying the home and moving in, the new tenant would be responsible for it. We refer to it as reset, resetting the deal with a new tenant. That's the main compromise that we reached on March 21 and that's implemented in these amendments. It's more technical than that, but I think that's the guts of what we're doing. I'd be happy to answer questions. These people are here to say yes.
You might have just jinxed it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Carpenter. I'm the Executive Director of Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon. We represent about 541 manufactured home communities across the state. This is the 10th coalition bill that I've been involved with after over 20 years with this association. And MHCO supports the Dash 3 Amendment, and we're thrilled that there's a compromise and that we have another coalition bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm an attorney with Davis Wright Tremaine and had the honor of serving as co-chair of the coalition with Mr. Van Lanningham. I want to thank Mr. Van Lanningham for his efforts in helping us reach an accord here. We thought we would, with the chair's consent, and this will take less than 1 minute, read into the record some examples of what are disrepair and deterioration to aid any future court in determining what the legislative intent was, which is better than necessarily consulting a dictionary. So it is my understanding that we are agreed that the following is a non-inclusive list of examples of disrepair and deterioration which are never waived. Home is in need of paint. Trim is in need of repair, caulking, and paint. Belly band trim is in need of repair, rotted or damaged. Skirting panels need replacement, are damaged or rotted. Home siding in need of replacement, rotted or damaged. Trim around windows needs repair and caulking, rotted or damaged. Window screens missing or in need of repair or replacement. Gutters, downspouts are loose or damaged and need repair or replacement. Roof needs repair or replacement. Deficient stairs and decks, deficient railings and handrails, decayed or damaged skirting, faded or missing paint, damaged gutters, missing or damaged roof shingles, broken windows, damaged awnings, insulation of water lines leading to the home. Fence needs to be restained or painted. Fence post rotted and needs replacement. Fence boards or rails are damaged or rotted. Deck porch surface steps and rails need restaining or paint. Deck porch surface is rotted or damaged. Deck porch rails are loose, damaged or rotted. Deck porch steps and or risers are damaged or rotted. Shed needs repainting. Shed siding and or trim is in need of repair, rotted or damaged. Shed door is off its hinges and sagging or won't close. Shed roof is sagging and needs replacement or to be rebuilt. Fascia trim on carport is rotting and falling off or post damaged from being run into. This is a non-inclusive list which we have agreed upon, which are examples of disrepair or deterioration which are never waived. And hopefully this is not the most exciting testimony I have ever given. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you.
Madam Chair, could I add one note?
Briefly, because we've got to get Representative Geyer back to
say that I agree that those are examples of disrepair. The bill would require some specificity if a landlord were to give a notice for some of those things. For example, what it is that's deficient about the handrail.
And Madam Chair, in time to comply, I assume.
Yes. In fact, the bill increases that time from 30 days to 60 days.
Or 60 days. Yeah. 6 months.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4/6/17.
Chair Olson moves to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4/6/17. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 277 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 277 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered, and the bill goes to the floor. And I think we should let Senator Roblin carry the bill because he was the sponsor of the bill.
If he wants, see, I am too.
And oh, you are too. Yeah, oh, breaking news. Yeah, how about we have you co-carry?
We can
Roblin
do that.
And Olson.
Sure,
and that makes sense because you've got the two bills that have come together.
Yeah.
All right, great. Thanks. So we will close the work session on Senate Bill 277, and we are going to return to the work session on Senate Bill 819. And we've got Arthur Stacey and Representative Kenny Geyer, who have all kindly emerged from other parts of the building. And Representative Kenny Geyer, why don't we let these two go first, unless are you in a really giant hurry?
My staff probably thinks I am. I have no idea where I'm supposed to be. They're taken out of meetings, and you just have to show up.
Thank you. You are so nice. I owe you one.
For the record, my name is Arthur Towers with the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. I understand I'm here to object to a wedding, perhaps. you want us to talk a little bit about 819?
Yes, and kind of the nature of the fix and how it relates to the rest of the bill.
Got it. In regard to the -1 amendments on Senate Bill 819, and that's the set that we're working on right now?
Correct. And the idea of moving it with the -1 to Representative Kenny Geyer's committee to continue and getting the negotiation right.
Chair Gelser, my apologies. I wasn't here for the first part of the work session. So we've had a great chance to visit with the chair of the committee and with the advocates for the bill. We have a little bit of concern. We have concerns. I don't want to minimize them, but I don't want to over dramatize them either. I have a lot of confidence that we can work those out throughout the process of the throughout the legislative process, either here or definitely across the building of the House.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and Vice Chair Olson. Stacey Ayers, for the record, CPS manager at the Department of Human Services. And as you have kind of had the conversation, I think the language is pretty technical, and we are wanting to be really careful about not kind of pushing it through, and we're worried, as Senator Gelser has indicated, worried about pushing it through and having it be wrong, and would like the opportunity to be able to work with members of OTLA on the other side and get this language right so that it actually meets what we're trying to do.
And could both of you just kind of clarify, is it the whole bill or is it a...
That's pretty limited to this one piece, so it isn't the whole bill. I think, you know, we are in a position, and I'm not speaking for Arthur, but we're in a position where we believe this is good legislation with the exception. We just want to make sure this last piece is right. So,
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, I guess I would take exception a little bit to what Stacey said. I think we're all on the same side here. We're all involved in fighting to protect kids. Our members come in at the end of the process after all the terrible things have happened and try to hold the system accountable and try to gain a measure of justice for these abused children or for their survivors. And so we want to be a constructive part of that process. We do see elements of the -1s that we hope get improved along the way. We have confidence that can happen. But again, we see ourselves all on the same side here to try to help kids.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. I'm Melissa Kenny-Geyer, House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland. I'm looking forward to working on this issue. I did want to just read for the record the text I got from Senator Gelser yesterday. I hope you're not too embarrassed that I'm reading this for the record. She said, "Hey, we may need some work on a late-breaking tangential issue on 819. Are you okay if I move it over to you and we keep working? Base issue is good. We are trying to work out some supplemental liability language, and there is ongoing discussion between DOJ and OTLA. We can resolve it, but it's complicated, and I'd rather do it right than do it fast." And that's generally my opinion, too. There's as much as you can get right in the originating committee before passing it on, great. But we all know what's happening in legislative council right now. They're all so backed up. And I think trying to rush it to get it right now is probably not the right direction. Happy to work on it in our committee.
As a proposal, what would be the possibility of moving this down to rules? I know you'd have to go to the president, but move it to rules so we can get it. There's nothing I hate worse than sending a bill over to get fixed or get work done. I'd just as soon it'd be right when it goes over. It makes it very easy for you to say this is a great piece of legislation. If we put it in rules, we would have a little bit more time to work out the details and make sure that we got it exactly the way it needs to be before it goes across, so that we, the concurrence when it comes back, everybody's scratching their head going, what did we do over there? I would prefer that myself.
And I think the only concern I have about that is there's just a ton of stuff getting moved down to rules today,
which,
and that workload,
true.
Though, and the policy committees, as we've talked and we went through kind of what we have coming to each other, we both have some time to work on some of these little pieces. And sometimes these things come up when we've sent them over earlier and they come up.
So, Madam Chair, just to clarify for myself, so the primary objection to the bill as it is now is coming from OTLA. Is that correct? Or?
Yes.
And is OTLA satisfied with willing to take the risk? It sounds as if you're willing to take the risk of it going over to the other side, and even if it doesn't get resolved on the other side, you feel confident enough that it will be resolved on the other side that you're willing to take that risk. Is that what I'm hearing?
Chair Gelser, Senator Dembro, I'm comfortable taking that risk.
Then I'm comfortable voting for it, Madam Chair.
And I would just say I understand Vice Chair Olson's concerns, and I don't know what else you've sent on to rules versus to the Human Services Committee on the House side. I think a lot of that is just a workflow issue, how much rules is handling versus how much we have. We had a really heavy load in the beginning, I mean up through April 18th, and we do have more time going forward if you choose to use our committee. I have not talked with them about this bill or about the issue. I just give you my commitment, if that's where it is, that we'll continue to work it there. But it's really up to, you know, what committee has the capacity to work on it right now.
And I would say the other piece is I really want to make sure that the other chamber has the opportunity to hear and consider and work on this bill. And with 3 weeks in that second half, we send it down to rules, we go through that process, we risk the ability of it to go to the Human Services Committee on the other side and landing in rules on the other side where it's not with the Human Services Committee. And I think it's important for both chambers to have a point. But I appreciate that this has been a lot of information, so I think the best thing for us to do is to hold the bill over until Monday, and we can continue working until Monday to see if the amendment comes back from Legislative Council. It's unclear that with the workflow in Legislative Council and how late the issue arose, whether or not we can get that amendment back. We can give it a couple more days to see if that happens. If that does happen, it would be my hope that on Monday we could move it on over to Representative Kinnegar's committee and give them the chance to do that work and see if there are other things that they wish to address. And I just really appreciate both Mr. Towers and Mr. Ayers, and I know all of the folks that are behind Mr. Towers and Mr. Ayers. It's never just two people having a conversation, that have worked really hard over the last couple days to try to resolve this, and it's not an aspersion on Legislative Council, who are absolutely slammed down there. And I think that was part of the intent too, was if we could let them take their foot off the pedal so that some of the other things that have more significant amendments that need to be done so that bills can actually move could get done. But if people are more comfortable waiting, we can have Legislative Council continue working and wait until Monday.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very
much. Chair Gelser, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. So we are going to hold over Senate Bill 819. I'm going to hold over Senate Bill 819. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 819. And briefly open up a work session on Senate Bill 268. Senate Bill 268, a couple of things have happened on this. This is the bill that had to do with when DHS gets a report of abuse in a non-family setting. And Bob Junduff and Stacey Ayers, again, have been working on this issue. The subsequent referral to judiciary has been removed, and the amendment is not back. And the proposal that came from DHS was simply to add the Protection Advocacy Organization, which is Disability Rights Oregon, to the list of entities that are informed when there is an abuse thing that comes in. Is that accurate? Okay. So we will hold 268 over to Monday. So holding that over, closing the work session on 268. Opening up a work session on Senate Bill 1023. I believe we're waiting for amendments on 1023, Senator Mundus Anderson.
We have the amendment.
Do we have the paperwork?
And do we have the paperwork?
No. They're still working on it. And I've been asking to see if we could get them, and we're waiting to hear back. I do have the amendment.
If we could have the amendment, I think Angie Albee is here.
Yeah. The amendment has been posted to OLS, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, what if we go ahead and work and adopt the amendment? I know we've got advocates here that would probably like to see the amendment get posted. We've got everybody here. So who, Senator Montes Anderson, do we need to have up at the dais? Angie Albee? Thank you and welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Angie Albee. I'm a legislative coordinator for the Oregon Department of Human Services, and I'm here today to represent the Aging and People with Disabilities Program and to provide information about Senate Bill 1023-1 amendment. So first of all, this would not be possible, and I must say, without the hard work and the presence and voice of the deaf, deaf, blind, and hard of hearing community, and also the partnership with the Public Utility Commission, the department, and Senator Montes Anderson. This Dash One amendment actually transfers $200,000 annually to the department in order to fund a program for the deaf, deaf, blind, and hard of hearing community, and in which that commission would then determine how that money would be spent and what it would be spent on. It also has a biennial reduction to prevent the program from being dependent and actually create some self-sustaining, as time goes on, being able to sustain the program without that funding.
Thank you. Any questions for Angie? Seeing none. Senator Olson, would you be willing to move the Dash One amendment?
Sure.
That's the date.
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the Dash One amendment dated 4/12/17.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash One amendment dated 4/12/17. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered, and we will hold it over until Monday, at which point we will send it on. So the bill is now in its form, and it will be ready to go on Monday. All right, so we are going to carry over Senate Bill 1023, carry over Senate Bill 1023, and close the work session on Senate Bill 1023, open up a work session on Senate Bill 860. And do we have JL here somewhere?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 860 requires DCBS to investigate parity of insurance reimbursements between behavioral mental health providers and those of medical providers and mental health providers with prescribing privileges. It requires DCBS to adopt rules ensuring the implementation of mental health parity and network adequacy requirements based on the findings. It directs DCBS to report findings and adopted rules to the Legislative Assembly by September 1st, 2018, and it sunsets on January 2nd, 2019, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a Dash One amendment which makes clarifying changes, and it changes the DCBS reporting date to September 1st, 2019, and it changes the sunset to January 2, 2021. The Dash One has a statement of no revenue impact. And there has been a fiscal statement issued for the Dash One, but it is primarily just a narrative explaining an indeterminate fiscal impact. And the bill was originally heard on March 15th.
All right. Thank you, JL.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. The Dash One amendments are an agreement between our group and DCBS. So we've come to agreement on the Dash Ones. They do three things. They extend out the time frame. We didn't want the clock to run out on that work if in fact it turned out to be an undertaking. The second thing, it changes the word investigations to examinations to comport more with DCBS vernacular, I guess you'd say. And then the third thing is it allows DCBS to exercise other options other than just rulemaking to remedy things that they might find. And so it gives them broader abilities other than just the promulgation of rules.
Great. Any questions for JL?
I have a question on why why it wouldn't go to Ways and Means. I would think it would require more work for DCBS.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and Senator Montes Anderson. It would have been my intention for it to go to Ways and Means. So if that's the motion, it certainly does not offend me.
Because I know it doesn't have a referral, right?
No, it doesn't have a referral.
It doesn't have a referral. Do we have the We have the SMS. Do we have the fiscal back? Yeah. So the fiscal does not.
Is DCBS here?
DCBS issued an indeterminate fiscal. I assumed that the bill would go to Ways and Means, but.
Yes. You can say this out loud.
Oh, sorry. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I did speak to the fiscal analyst since the fiscal statement was posted just before meeting time. They did mention that they were not asking for it to be sent to Ways and Means at this time.
So I would, given that LFO has seen it and they don't want it, I would, again, that whole idea of workflow and workload, I'd like to move it on, if that's okay with people. All right, thank you so much. Senator Olson, we have the script for 816. Thank you.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 32917.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 32917. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 860 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 860 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I would just like to say I am really excited about this bill. I actually think it's one of the more important bills that's come through the committee as we look at the challenges that we have with access to mental health. The idea of mental health parity really is at the core of that. A lot of times in the committee and in the public process, we talk about the CCOs and the publicly funded services for individuals that need mental health services, but the ability to access services through a commercial insurer, whether that's the ability for people to stay in business based on the rate that they are receiving or the adequacy of the panels that are available to people when they need services, actually do impact our public systems. Because when people go into a mental health crisis because they have never been able to access those services, they end up coming into the system through the state hospital or jail or losing their job and coming into the CCO. So just a lot of thanks to everybody that worked to bring this forward. I think this is long overdue and really has the potential to make a significant impact on access to mental health in Oregon.
Well, you get to carry the bill then.
Okay. Is there any objection to the bill?
No.
Seeing none, the motion passes, it goes to the floor, and I'd be very happy to carry it. So I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 860. We are carrying over, so open a work session on Senate Bill 58. We, again, in late breaking news, heard from Fred about this time yesterday that he needed another amendment. So we are waiting, and we requested the amendment. We will do our best to get it back. Again, we're kind of at this point where the clock is not necessarily on our side because we both need the amendment and the fiscal impact back, but we will do our best. So we will carry Senate Bill 58 over until Monday. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 58. Open a work session on Senate Bill 48. We are also carrying over Senate Bill 48. There are still conversations and an amendment that is being waited on that has not been returned that we put in. So we're waiting to see if it comes back and to see where we get OMA and ONA on that, but we appear to be close. So carrying over Senate Bill 48 and closing the work session on Senate Bill 48. Senate Bill 238, we kept on the agenda. This had to do with provider wages. There is a work group that came out of Chair Kenny Geyer's committee on the other side, and we were waiting to see where the fixes would go. This bill is no longer needed, and we got confirmation today from the advocates for this bill that they were okay with that. So we are not going to open up the work session, and we are not rescheduling it. That bill is going away. So we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 275.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 275 permits a covered entity to deny a charge or fee for additional copies of personally identifiable health information requested by the appellant or the appellant's representative in actions to appeal denial of Social Security disability benefits. There is a Dash 1 amendment which replaces several provisions. It requires the covered entity to provide one free copy of an individual's health information from the period after the initial application for Social Security disability benefits, and to get those sometime prior to the individual's administrative hearing. And it also permits the individual to request the format of the copy. There is a no expenditure impact statement from LFO and a no revenue impact statement from LRO on the dash one. The bill was originally heard on February 13th.
Thank you. And do OMA and OTLA want to come up? Have we lost OTLA? Do we only have OMA? Good afternoon, Courtney Dresser for the Oregon Medical Association. We want to thank the chair for the Dash One. This, I think, just kind of puts into focus the intent of Senate Bill 710 from 2015 and that time gap frame that we were kind of going back and forth on. I think this does that, and we're supportive of the Dash Ones. Thank you. And I think as we've had a number of meetings together, all of us, and the commitment I made was to put onto the record that there is a, it is a right to a single letter that, or a single set of records, and that it is the individual that makes the request or their personal representative, and the law as it is written does not define an attorney as a personal representative. An individual may sign a release form and have that record sent to the attorney, but it would be inappropriate for an attorney to go to a medical office and threaten a lawsuit to someone if they did not provide the record to them without the written consent of their client. That is how we read the law, and we appreciate you putting that on the record. All right. Are there any questions for Courtney? No, seeing none. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment stated 4717.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment stated 4717. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I moved Senate Bill 275 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 275 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? No, I think the one other thing that I'd want to put on the record, I really appreciated the conversations between OMA and OTLA, and really wanted to thank OTLA for reaching out to OMA. I know there have been some issues with particular situations, and OTLA's willingness to really work hard to address those, even when it didn't involve their own members, I think is just really speaks well of the folks at OTLA. So many thanks to OTLA and OMA for working on this for the entire session to get to this point. Is there any objection to 275 as amended? Seeing none, it goes to the floor. And Senator Montes Anderson, would you carry this one?
Sure.
So Senator Montes Anderson will carry. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 275. We already moved Senate Bill 277. Okay, so opening work session on Senate Bill 749. I've got to make sure I don't have these mixed up. This bill, we're actually carrying over until Monday. The only thing, we're waiting for an amendment to come back. The only thing that it will include, if the amendment comes back in time, is the ability for a child who is 15 years or older to sign their own release of information only for their own personally identifiable information, and all the rest of it would go away if we get the amendment back on time, which we may not. So we will carry over Senate Bill 749, close the work session on Senate Bill 749. Senate Bill 265, we are not opening and we are not rolling over. This bill had a whole series of things in it, consistent with the idea that our caseworkers have too many things asked of them. It did not make sense to move forward while there's so much work to do, with the exception of the exit interview upon leaving foster care, which was a recommendation from public knowledge, and we put that into Senate Bill 942 that we moved earlier this week. So we will capture that through that legislation that's now down in Ways and Means, and we'll come back in a couple weeks there. So not carrying it over, not scheduling it, that bill has gone quietly to sleep. So to To recap, we are carrying, we didn't get the 263 fiscal, did we, while we were sitting here?
We did not, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And
we didn't get 1023?
No, not yet.
Okay.
No.
Okay, so just to be triply sure, we are carrying over Senate Bill 263, which we will work on Monday. We are carrying over Senate Bill 819, which we will work on Monday. We are carrying over Senate Bill 268, which we will work on Monday. We are carrying over Senate Bill 1023, which we will work on Monday. We are carrying over Senate Bill 58, which we hope to be able to work on Monday. We are carrying over Senate Bill 48, which we may work on Monday. And we are carrying over Senate Bill 749, which we may or may not work on Monday. Does that cover, did I miss anything? Is there anybody here that is thinking I just killed a bill that they thought was not going to die? Speak now or forever hold your peace, because there is, yes? Oh, good heavens, yes. And we are carrying over Senate Bill 944, which does not wish to die. It is Easter week. So, all right, any other not dead bills that need to be rescued in these final moments? No. All right, thank you all so very much, and thank you all for your patience today. It gets a little wacky as we hit the deadlines and have to figure out what to do, and I just appreciate everybody's patience.
So, can I ask
you, yes.
Are we closed?
Not yet. Now we're closed. We're adjourned. Now we're closed. We're adjourned. Yes.
Are we closed?
Not yet.